Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, April 24th, an absolutely lovely spring day here in North Texas. We've got a lot to get into today. It's been a very busy day. I do want to begin, though, by sending a get well greeting to President Bush, who is apparently in a Houston hospital as we speak right now. He's having some serious complications. Apparently, it's more serious than we thought it was. So we're praying for you, Mr. Bush. I'm sure you'll be good. I'm sure you'll be good. By the way, speaking of President Bush, with the funeral of his wonderful wife Barbara, obviously President Carter didn't make it. He apparently has not been in good health either. He's about 94, 95. So we've got a couple of aging presidents who are not doing very well with their health. So please keep them in your prayers. Today we're going to talk about an article that I have down at the American Thinker today talking about Venezuela. In fact, I have one today, and I'm going to try to have another one tomorrow because there's a real problem going on, not in Venezuela. We've talked about this many times, but the problem is now starting to spill into other countries, and that's what we're going to get into as well. They had an election, or they're going to have an election, I should say, in Mexico, and they had a debate a couple of days ago, and it looks like López Obrador, the man from the left, is apparently leading in the polls. Again, as I've told you before, I wouldn't bet my whole life on that yet. I think that can still change, but he seems to be increasing his lead, which is, of course, a little concerning because this is a man from the left, although I don't think he's going to be able to do as much as he tells his audience that he's going to be able to do. President Macron is in town. President Macron of France is in town. He and President Trump had a news conference this morning. You know, it's interesting when you see these two guys, these two gentlemen. President Trump must be old enough to be his father. I mean, certainly looks that way on the screen. And obviously President Trump being a lot taller, a lot bigger of a man, President Macron, a smaller man physically. And yet I think that President Macron is a little more realistic than some of the presidents of France recently, at least more realistic when it comes to dealing with terrorism and also dealing with the immigration problem that so many countries in Europe are having. And he's also trying to reform the French economy. He's not having a lot of luck with that because he's having a lot of demonstrations and so on. France is an overregulated, overtaxed country, and it's very difficult to take those things away from people once you give them to them because they get attached to those entitlements and they think they have them forever. Of course, in the case of France, the reason Macron wants to make these changes is because the economy is not growing as much as it should be growing to maintain the welfare state, and he's got to get more growth, and it's very difficult to have growth in an economy when you have all this weight of taxes and regulations on your producers. But I was pretty impressed with Macron. I think that he and Trump appear to be in agreement on most things. Probably the biggest disagreement is the Iran nuclear deal. And I just don't think President Trump is going to renew it. I think he's going to kill it whenever it comes up for that. I think it's the 12th of May when it comes up for renewal or whatever, and I think he should kill it. I always felt the Iran nuclear deal gave away too much, but I also think it was done incorrectly. I mean, it should have been sent to the Senate, and it should have been done as a treaty, which is what the Constitution calls for. So, you know, when it comes up for renewal, let it lapse and send it to the Senate and let's have a treaty. Let's have something that goes the way the Constitution calls for these things, which is a treaty. Let's have a treaty. And when you have a treaty, of course, you have a huge debate in the Senate, and that's the way it should be. And I also think it'd be interesting to get some of the Democrats on the record because it was very easy for the Democrats to support the Iran nuclear deal. But once you have a treaty, and once you have to debate it openly, I think you're going to see a lot more Democrats show concerns over this nuclear deal, particularly people like Senator Schumer, who has historically been very pro-Israel. And I think he went along with the Iran nuclear deal just because it was a Democrat president. But I have a funny feeling he's going to be a lot tougher if it ever becomes a treaty and has to actually go through the process of discussion and debate as treaties have to do. So I was impressed, as I say, with President Macron. I think he's a realistic man, but he faces very serious difficult times in France. And I think we all kind of knew that that's the way it was going to go. Well, I'm very happy. I'm very happy that Mr. Pompeo passed the first test, which is the confirmation, I guess, or the committee. He will now go to the floor, where he's probably going to get about 55 or 56 votes. He will get the Republican votes. And there's apparently three or four Democrats, red state Democrats, as we like to call them, who are going to vote for him. I think that makes a lot of sense, not just for their own political survival. I just think that, you know, as I've said many times, the confirmation process is not to relitigate the last election. The confirmation process is to look at the man's background and say, okay, does this man meet the qualifications, the general qualifications of a Secretary of State? And the answer is yes. The answer is absolutely yes. There's no doubt that Mike Pompeo is qualified to be Secretary of State. A year ago, he was qualified to be Director of the CIA. So what has changed in a year? So, of course, he should be confirmed as Secretary of State. And he should be on the job, hopefully, by the middle of the week, and we can finally have a Secretary of State. And that's the way it should be. But all of this partisanship, I think, is really hurting the country. And I can tell you, the Democrats think that they're scoring points by having all of this silliness and partisanship over nominations. I think it may be scoring liberal points, but I don't think it's scoring independent. Obviously, it's not scoring points with people like me. But I think the independents, the people who decide elections, I don't think they want to see this. I really don't. And I think this is where they're hurting themselves a great deal by arguing about these things over and over and over again and coming up with some idiotic reasons to oppose a good quality man like Pompeo. So I'm glad he's going to go to the Senate. He will be the Secretary of State probably in a couple of days, and that's a good thing because we need a good man like Mike Pompeo as Secretary of State. We're going to take a little break. We're going to hear from my friend Carlos Geddes, and we'll be right back.
This is Carlos Geddes Harpy. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Tzatziki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Tzatziki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And if you look for him in the show description, right under the show content, you will see Carlos Geddes' schedule this week in Dallas. You click on that, and it'll take you to his schedule. I think it goes to the Twitter page where he's got his entire schedule here in Dallas. Well, let's talk about a couple of big stories. As I said, I've been writing a couple of posts at the American Thinker lately about what is happening in Venezuela. And the problem in Venezuela is now exploding into other countries. And, for example, Colombia has a border with Venezuela. Brazil has a border with Venezuela. And just looking at news reports, the Brazilian government says that something like 40,000 Venezuelans have crossed into their territory. Now, this is creating quite a problem for Brazil, as it would be with any other country. But the biggest problem is that region of Brazil, the geography in that region is not exactly suitable for just taking in 40,000 people. Much of it is isolated jungle areas. So it's very dangerous, really, for these people to be walking into Brazil in those areas. Then you go over to Venezuela and Colombia, that's even worse. That's over 100,000 people, according to President Santos, the president of Colombia. So you now have a situation in Colombia. We've been talking, in Venezuela. You now have a situation in Venezuela. We have been talking about the implosion of Venezuela. Well, ladies and gentlemen, Venezuela has imploded. It's not about to implode. It has imploded. And the country has basically collapsed. There's no country. There's really very little law and order. Tremendous lawlessness in the country. The violence is out of control. Things are totally out of control. And the people who can come to the United States and get political asylum, well, they've done that. But obviously most people cannot do that. So they do the next best thing, which is crossing to Colombia so that they can at least buy food or buy medicine for their children, or they go into Brazil. And it's a very bad situation for not just for Colombia and for Brazil, but for the people of Venezuela. And now that the problem is spilling into other countries, maybe Latin America, some of these other countries, will finally start doing something about Venezuela. And I think maybe it's time for these countries to get together and say, you know what, we have to figure out a solution to this. We're going to have to come together and figure out a solution for Venezuela. But we can't just be taking on refugees in this fashion. It's economically a nightmare, of course, for these countries, but it's a humanitarian crisis of historic proportions. So bad situation down in Venezuela. And as I say, the problem is now spilling into other countries. Very bad situation. Well, they're having an election down in Mexico in July. It's the first Sunday of July, so whatever day that is. And there are three men running for president. López Obrador, he's from the left. Mr. Anaya, he's from the right or center-right. And then there is a Mr. Mead, who is from somewhat of a centrist position. And all of these men are running for president. There's like 12 candidates actually running, but these three are the three major ones. These three are probably going to get between 85 and 90% of the vote. So one of these three men will be the next president of Mexico. The polls are showing López Obrador, who is the left of center candidate. He has run for president twice before, and they're showing him ahead. And he may very well, in fact, win the presidency. He's going to do it, of course, with a plurality, because with that many people running, nobody's going to get a majority. A lot of people are very concerned about him because of his populist and, one would argue, left-of-center views. But I actually think that if he were to get elected and then has to face the reality of governing, that it may not be as bad as people think. And in fact, in many ways, as I was telling a Mexican friend the other day, the worst thing that could happen to López Obrador and many of his supporters would be for him to get elected, because they're going to find out very quickly how difficult it is to govern and how difficult it is to keep the promises that you make in the campaign, particularly a lot of these populist, nationalist promises. As I said before, I don't think this is a done deal. I still think this thing can change. I don't believe that, it's not a done deal that López Obrador is going to win, but if you believe the polls, he's leading as of today. But you've got two more months of campaigning, something like 10 weeks left of campaigning, and that's a long time. That's a long time. And I know that there's a lot of people in Mexico who are very concerned about this man's candidacy, so I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people begin to support one of the other two, or one of the other two major candidates who they believe has a better chance of stopping López Obrador. We're just going to have to keep an eye on Mexico and see what happens. I also do not discount the very real possibility that López Obrador will say something very stupid and all of a sudden begin to collapse in the polls. He's been known to do that before. Well, I want to take you back. If you're over 45, you're going to remember this. If you're under 45, you're not going to remember this. But in 1980, on this day, President Carter came on national television and made the announcement that the Iran rescue mission had failed. It was a terrible moment, not just for the young men who were killed in that failed mission, but for the country as a whole. And it was one of those mornings that I remember just feeling very sick and very sad. And it probably, this was probably the last straw of the Carter presidency. I think after this one, I don't think he ever had a chance to win the presidency. But April 25th, 1980, when we learned about the failed rescue mission in Iraq. Have a wonderful day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto, beautiful Dallas, Texas. Bye-bye, everybody.